Blog Talk Radio.
Today we've had a national tragedy. Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center in an apparent terrorist attack on our country. I have spoken to the Vice President, to the Governor of New York, to the Director of the FBI, and have ordered that the full resources of the federal government go to help the victims and their families and to conduct a full-scale investigation to hunt down and to find those folks who committed this act.
Thank you all.
Get him, George!
I want you all to know I can't go any louder. I want you all to know that America today is on bended knee in prayer for the people whose lives were lost here, for the workers who work here, for the families who mourn. This nation stands with the good people of New York City and New Jersey and Connecticut as we mourn the loss of thousands of our citizens. I can hear you. I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon. Making the nation proud, and may God bless America.
Those are just a few of the few memories from this day, 14 years ago, and this is a sober day, but welcome to the Conservative Cauldron, Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am your host, Becky Noble, and that speech by former President George W. Bush, where he had the bullhorn and he was standing on top of that pile of rubble with all the firemen cheering him on, that's one of my favorites to this day. And I don't know that we've lived up to that, but that's a topic we can get into later on, but this is a somber day for our nation, and we remember those people that we lost, and the people that we lost in New York in the towers, the people that we lost in the Pentagon, the people that we lost in that open field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Those people were the first casualties in this war on terror, and they're certainly not going to be the last. And of course, we take time out today to remember this day and to reflect and wow, there's so many questions, you know? I mean, have we learned anything? I think the American people have. I don't know about our leaders. I don't know that our leaders have. I'm loaded for bear today. I've got lots of stuff, and you know, I think it kind of is all it's all related to 9/11, because we had the big rally in Washington this week, the big anti-Iran nuke deal rally. We have the refugee crisis going on in Europe, and there's just thousands upon thousands of Syrian refugees flooding the borders of European nations, and we don't know who these people are. They could be refugees, but they could also be terrorists. We don't know. And, you know, it just, so much of what we're dealing with today stems from what happened on this date 14 years ago. And, you know, I know that when we talk about this every year when September 11th rolls around, that people kind of reflect on where they were and what they were doing. And, you know, for those of us who were not alive when President John Kennedy was assassinated, this is kind of the day that we will always remember where we were and what we were doing on that day, just like people who were alive back then remember where they were and what they were doing when they heard the news that President Kennedy had been assassinated. And my own personal remembrances of this day, I was about 3 weeks away from getting married. So as a nervous bride-to-be, I was thinking about a dress fitting that I was going to have the following Saturday. I was thinking about caterers and cakes and bridesmaids and flowers and all of the things that coming wedding. And those were the things that were front and center on my mind. And I remember turning on the TV that day and thinking that the world can't be coming to an end. I'm getting married in 3 weeks. No, this is impossible. This can't be happening. And that's where I was. That's what I was doing and what was going on in my own personal life on this day 14 years ago. And I'm sure we'll all think about that today. Not only will we think about the lives of our fellow citizens that were lost, our fellow Americans, but like I said, we do think about what we were doing and where we were on this day 14 years ago. And like I said, I don't know how much you're going to hear from me today, because I've got a ton of sound to get to today, and but that's part of the fun. I would be remiss if I did not say that chat room, of course, is open. You can go there, and you can call in here. The number is 347-857-2620, 347-857-2620. And like I just said, I think that so much of what we're dealing with today as a nation, sure, we have domestic problems, but so much of the things regarding foreign policy and issues along those lines, so much of it is dealing with what started on this day 14 years ago. And I guess one of the big things this week was this massive rally in D.C. to protest this nuclear deal with Iran that the Obama administration believes will stop the Iranian regime from acquiring nuclear weapons. And I think that we all know that this is, anybody who knows anything about this deal, it's former Vice President Dick Cheney called it madness, and I think that he describes it in a nutshell. That's exactly what it is. It's madness. We are going to provide the monetary funds for this murderous regime who, while negotiations are going on, are actively chanting death to America, death to Israel. The Supreme Leader Rouhani just tweeted the other day that Israel will not exist in 25 years. They're telegraphing what they want to do while these negotiations are going on. I don't know how any other administration could look so uninformed and so naive and quite frankly so stupid to go ahead with these negotiations and think that this is a good deal. All the while, these people are chanting death to America. They are telegraphing to us and to the rest of the world what they're going to do, what their intentions are. And, you know, it's got people just shaking their heads because we just can't understand how anybody would sign on to this deal. But there was a big rally in D.C. This week, like I said, and there were a lot of people there. There were presidential candidates there, former presidential candidates there, radio talk show hosts, not this one, of course, but there was a lot of people there. There was a lot of people speaking, and I don't know that it did any good. We'd like to think that it did, but I think, and especially in light of yesterday, the Senate Democrats blocked the resolution of disapproval on this deal. And, I mean, it's basically, it's a protection. It's protecting Obama's rear end. And really, it ensures that this deal is going to go through. It pretty much does. The only thing that may be left to do, there could be a legal issue involved here. The House of Representatives is going to assert that the Obama administration did not disclose any of these other side deals that were going on while these negotiations were taking place. And like I said, it could set up a legal challenge because all of the information regarding this nuclear deal is supposed to be provided to Congress prior to a 60-day review period. And if that has not happened, their contention is that this 60-day review period has not started if they do not have all the necessary information on this deal. And that would include any side deals, any under-the-table shenanigans that are going on. And but like I said, I got tons of sound here from the rally, and like I said, there was a lot of people there talking about this deal and talking about how naive it is, talking about how dangerous it is for America, for Israel, for the world. And here's a little bit of sound here. I've got Donald Trump. I've got a little Ted Cruz. Got a little Levin. Can't beat a good Levin rant. Got some Bill Robertson of Duck Dynasty was also speaking at this rally. A little Sarah Palin. She kind of she was talking about the insanity of this deal, but she also had a few other comments. So let's listen. Here's Donald Trump first.
So I've been doing deals for a long time. I've been making lots of wonderful deals, great deals. That's what I do. Never, ever, ever in my life have I seen any transaction so incompetently negotiated as our deal with Iran. They take our money. They make us look like fools. And now they're back to being who they really are. They don't want Israel to survive. They will not let Israel survive with incompetent leadership like we have right now. Israel will not survive. And then when it's all done, or they think it's all done, we're going to get nothing, nothing. We are led by very, very stupid people. Very, very stupid people. We cannot let it continue. We are a country that owes $19 trillion. We lose everywhere. We lose militarily. We can't beat ISIS. Give me a break. We can't beat anybody. Our vets are being treated horribly. We will have so much winning if I get elected that you may get bored with winning. Believe me, I agree. You'll never get bored with winning. We never get bored.
God bless the United States of America. What an incredible gathering here today. I want to speak to three groups of people. I want to start by speaking to the American people. This Iranian nuclear deal is catastrophic. It is the single greatest national security threat facing America. If it goes through, there will be three consequences. Number one, the Obama administration will become, quite literally, the world's leading financier of radical Islamic terrorism. If it goes through, over $100 billion will flow directly to Iran, to the Ayatollah Khamenei, to radical Islamic terrorists across the world, and those jihadists will use those billions to murder Americans, to murder Israelis, to murder Europeans. The second consequence of this catastrophic deal is that it abandons four American hostages in an Iranian hellhole, including Pastor Saeed Abedini, an American citizen, a Christian pastor, sentenced to 8 years in prison for the crime of preaching the gospel, including former Marine Amir Hekmati, including Washington Post reporter Jason Rezi, and including Bob Levinson. It is a disgrace for this administration to abandon Americans in Iranian hellholes. But the third consequence of this deal going through, if it does, is that it will facilitate and accelerate the nation of Iran acquiring nuclear weapons. There is no greater threat to the safety and security of America. There is no greater threat to the safety and security of Israel than a nuclear Iran. I agree with Prime Minister Netanyahu that a nuclear Iran poses an existential threat to the nation of Israel. And let me be clear, when he says existential, he doesn't mean a bunch of Frenchmen in black berets chain smoking. He means literally going to the very existence of Israel. When Prime Minister Netanyahu addressed a joint session of Congress, a joint session that President Obama boycotted, that Vice President Biden boycotted, that every member of the cabinet boycotted, I participated in a panel discussion with Elie Wiesel, the Nobel laureate, the Holocaust survivor. And Elie Wiesel observed the one threat on the face of the earth capable of murdering 6 million Jews in an instant in a flash of light is a nuclear Iran. Elie Wiesel observed, never again means never again.
That clip is about 12 minutes long there of Ted Cruz, and as much as I would love to play the whole thing, I've got so much more to get to. But Donald Trump and Ted Cruz have I couldn't have said it any better. It's, as Donald Trump said, it's one of the most incompetently negotiated deals that could possibly have happened. And everything that Ted Cruz said, the Iranians will get $100 billion, $150 billion, if they don't have the capabilities themselves to create these weapons, they're going to acquire them. What does anybody think that they're going to do with that money? It's mind-boggling. And I believe that Senator Cruz went on to say that he hoped the 42 Senate Democrats who supported this deal would, quote, go home, pray, and reconsider their votes. But you know, I don't know that that's going to happen. I'm real quickly before I take a break here. I'm going to Sarah Palin also spoke at this rally, and she spoke about the insanity of this deal. But she also had a couple other things to say. Just real quickly here, this is a real short clip.
Oh, and you know, since our president won't say it, since he still hasn't called off the dogs, we'll say it. Police officers and first responders all across the state.
I thought that was just kind of a nice touch because again, she's absolutely right. As far as the murder of police officers in the line of duty this year, just going off topic here real quick, the president has really not said a whole lot about it, and quite frankly, I think he gives it a wink and a nod. He'll tell you that he doesn't encourage it, but I think by his silence, he he condones it. And I think a lot of other people think that too. I'm going to take a quick break. Easy for me to say today. I will be right back in just a minute. We've got lots more sound to get to. We've got, of course, we've got Mark Levin. I got Phil Robertson. Kim Davis got out of jail, the Rowan County, Kentucky clerk, who had refused to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples, was released from jail earlier this week, and we will hear from her. Plus, of course, I've got a whole lot more. So you are listening to The Conservative Cauldron, Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble. Don't go anywhere. I will be right back.
I love those times so well. You know I wouldn't change a thing. That's how I learned to sing. That's what I know so well. Yes, I know how to party, but I know how to tell it like it is. I wanna thank you for the good times and the lessons that I learned these years. Don't you know?
Cauldron Radio. I'm your host, Becky Noble, TGIF. The weekend is upon us. Once again, glad you're here to begin your weekend here listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio with me. We, of course, are talking about, of course, today is a very special day for Americans, very somber day, September 11th. We all remember where we were and what we were doing on this day. And of course, we're remembering our fellow Americans that we lost today, and hopefully getting angry all over again, or maybe still angry. I'm of the opinion that we should see, I don't know, maybe not every day, because it tends to have less of an impact on you, but I think we need to see those planes flying into those towers a hell of a lot more than we do, because I think that people have forgotten, and I think we've forgotten how angry as a people, as a nation, we were, and how unified we were. And, you know, you can point to a lot of things that might be the cause as to why we are not as unified today as we were on this day 14 years ago. That's maybe a discussion for another show. But, yeah, I think we need to see those towers falling a hell of a lot more than we do, because people aren't angry anymore, and a lot of people aren't angry. I'm still angry, and I think that many of you are too. And that would lead us to what we are talking about, the big rally in D.C. this week that was to protest this hideously naive, stupid, dangerous nuclear deal with Iran. And we've heard from Donald Trump, we've heard from Ted Cruz about the destruction, basically. I mean, maybe it sounds melodramatic, but, you know, the destruction of the United States, potentially, the destruction of Israel, most certainly. We know that that's first and foremost on the Iranian regime's mind, is the destruction of Israel. They've told us it's non-negotiable. And, but apparently we think that they're just joshing, they're just bluffing. But, yeah, maybe a lot of people thought they were just joshing and just bluffing too 14 years ago. Guess what? They weren't. And for anybody who is willing to admit it, maybe, that, you know, like I just said, we've forgotten. We've forgotten just how phenomenal, in an evil sense, that 9/11 was. And the next attack, and it's a matter, right now, today, at this point, with the leadership in this nation, it's a matter of time. And the next attack that happens on this nation is going to make 9/11 look like a walk in the park. It's going to make it look like a picnic. And that can happen if an evil regime like Iran acquires nuclear weapons. But like I said, we heard from Ted Cruz. We heard from Donald Trump. Let's hear now from radio talk show host Mark Levin. Like I always say, there's nothing like a good Levin rant. So here was some of Mark Levin's thoughts at the rally this week.
We are here to tell the world that we, the American people, are more resolute than ever. We are more resolute than ever to destroy those who threaten to wage war against us, our society, and our ally Israel. This enemy makes a grave error in confusing the appeasement of a president and a Democrat party and the capitulation of a Republican Congress with the strength and fortitude of the American people. Never before has a president of the United States, never before has a political party consented to funding and arming the enemy. Never before has a president entered into agreements with a terrorist regime that holds Americans hostages, that has killed and maimed thousands of American soldiers, and that seeks nuclear weapons and ICBMs to attack his own country. Barack Obama makes Neville Chamberlain look like George S. Patton. This phony deal allows the Iranian terrorist regime to inspect its own nuclear sites, to continue uranium enrichment, to build advanced centrifuges, to perfect their ICBMs, to spend $150 billion on terrorism. And in the end, to secure nuclear warheads. And as one Democrat after another, one conga line of Democrat after another, supports this surrender, it's clear that the Democrats no longer represent the party of Harry Truman and John F. Kennedy. It's now the Democrat Party of Bill Ayers, Saul Alinsky, and Barack Obama. And the Democrat Party will have blood on its hands as a result of this deal for the rest of time. And let me be clear, this deal sows the seeds of war. The enemy is emboldened, and the enemy will be well armed and seek regional and world domination. How do we know? They told us so. But what are the
That is, of course, radio talk show host Mark Levin. And again, it's a much longer clip than I have time to play here because, of course, we've got so much more to get to. But I couldn't say it any better. He's laid it out right there. He's explained what the problems are. And the fact that the Senate Democrats and the Democrat Party is deaf to this, is deaf to the warning signals of this deal is, well, it tells you who they are. And, you know, all the people who spoke here at this rally aren't afraid to call things what they are and say what needs to be said, regardless of whether or not it's politically correct or whether it's nice. It's time to stop being nice when it comes to things like this. And, you know, the media is going to spin it any way they want. And the media is going to cover for Barack Obama and the rest of the liberal Democrats, but they're not going to be able to silence. They don't have to cover it. There was probably minimal coverage of this rally, but you know what? That's okay because there's plenty of other people who will cover it and who will get it out there and who will make sure that the American people know exactly what is going on here. Very quickly, so we can move on to some other things here. Like I said, I got tons of stuff to get to today here. Real quickly, Duck Dynasty's Phil Robertson also spoke at this rally. And, you know, one of the things that makes Duck Dynasty and the Robertsons so popular is that they also tell it like it is. So to wrap things up here with the rally, let's hear a little bit from Phil.
They're saying, death to you, we're going to kill you. That's the last bunch you want to have nuclear weapons. Israel, the most faithful ally we have. You know why I love Israel? They wrote the Bible. That's why I love them. When God chose to become flesh 2015 years ago, your calendar dates that event. God becoming flesh. You know what kind of flesh he became? Jewish flesh. They wrote the Bible for crying out loud. Therefore, you never, ever want to put them in unnecessary danger with this deal will do. I'll leave you with this. As far as anti goes, listen up. What we are, America, we're anti-corruption. We are anti-ripping babies out of their mother's wombs and selling their body parts. We are anti-perversion, for crying out loud. And we are pro-God Almighty. We're pro-gun. We're pro-get your tail out there and go to work. Therefore, I love you all. God loves you. I think that America, they always say the same thing. That old Robertson guy just too religious. You know what I say? I say America ain't religious enough.
That is, of course, Phil Robertson, Duck Dynasty's Phil Robertson, telling it like it is at the anti-Iran nuke deal rally that took place this week in Washington, D.C. And you know, we'll see what happens here. But by all accounts, this is a done deal. And, you know, we will go on from there. But there will be a lot of people, including our president, our sitting president, who will have blood on his hands. But, you know, like I said at the top of the show, that so many things that we are dealing with today stem from what took place 14 years ago. And I don't know, you know, maybe partially this does, but we're also looking this week at this tide, this flood of refugees from Syria and other Middle Eastern nations flooding through Europe. They're coming through Hungary, they're coming through Germany, it's just a wave of refugees. And you know, here's the thing that people are starting to ask a lot of questions, and I think so about this too, that there are just too many questions about this group, about these people that are flooding into European nations. And this is a report from yesterday from Fox News, and Germany plans to take in 500,000. Let that number sink in. 500,000 Middle East refugees per year. And yeah, you know, humanitarian organizations, of course, are hailing that as wonderful and all of that. But and Chancellor Angela Merkel is you know, standing at the border welcoming so many of these people into her country. And you know, does she realize that maybe not all of these people are coming into Germany and coming to Europe with good intentions? That there's some terrorists sprinkled in there. In between the women and children, just to make it look good, there's some terrorists in there. And how do we know that? We know that because ISIS has already stated that they're going to plant jihadist fighters among these refugees. And a lot of German citizens are really having a hard time with this and wondering why their government is not taking this seriously. And you know, I've got to wonder right along with them. And, you know, there's just too many questions. There's too many, you know, how on earth are you going to set up a process to where you can vet all of these people and find out just exactly who they are? Probably many of them have no personal documents or personal papers to state who they are. And also, by the way, documents that state that you are a Syrian citizen right now in that portion of the world, it's a big business. Because a lot of people who have no way of proving that they are, in fact, Syrian citizens and Syrian refugees are being turned away, and of course, they don't want that to happen. So fake documents is, you know, there's a great example of capitalism right there, supply and demand. If you need some fake Syrian documents, there's Mohammed there down the street that's going to provide those for you. And, you know, it's... Angela Merkel has gone on to talk about what an economic boon this will be for Germany, not just for Germany, but for Europe. There's also people who, German citizens, like a lot of American citizens that have happened here, that have left their country of origin, gone to Syria to fight with ISIS, and are sneaking back into the country. So with there's so many, with this influx of refugees going on, there's so much back and forth going on that nobody knows who's going where. You don't know if the terrorists are coming in. Are they coming back in? Nobody knows. That's just it. And, you know, there is this report here from Fox News says that with this influx of refugees, the other thing that maybe Chancellor Merkel is not considering at this point, that she's merely looking at this from an economic standpoint, that there's going to be a clash of cultures underway here. And at a news conference last week, she was actually asked this question. Someone asked her, how do you plan to protect our culture from Islamization? And her response was that she was urging the German people not to let fear drive the nation's immigration policy. But that is a stance that is at odds with some prior statements, including one from 2010, where she said that, quote, the approach to build a multicultural society and to live side by side and enjoy each other has failed. And right now today, Germany's population is around 80 million, and of that 80 million, 4 million are Muslim. But, you know, there's also a little tidbit here in this report that Saudi Arabia, a nation who has not offered to take any of these people, there is a lot of other Muslim countries in this part of the world. Why aren't these people going there? Why won't any of those countries offer to take them in? First of all, because those people know under what kind of regime they're going to live if they go to a Muslim country, what kind of oppression they're going to live under, what kind of life they're going to have, and they don't want that. They don't want to go to another Muslim country. And Saudi Arabia has refused to accept any of these refugees. However, they have offered to build 200 mosques in Germany for newly arrived Syrians. Well, that is mighty big of them. That is just wonderful. No, we refuse to take any refugees because they know that there are terrorists sprinkled in among these refugees, and they don't want any part of it. Who could blame them? So they've refused to take any of these refugees, any of these Syrian citizens. But here's what we'll do for you. We'll build a couple hundred mosques that are invading Europe and invading Germany and invading other European nations so that they have some place to worship and they have some place to gather. And, oh, by the way, with all of the terrorists sprinkled in there, they may have somewhere to plot and scheme other terrorist activities and other terrorist attacks. That's mighty nice of you, Saudis. Thanks a bunch. But, you know, that's another thing. It's one of the other things that Angela Merkel and I suspect, because President Obama just yesterday, I believe, instructed the U.S. government to, at first, at the very least, prepare to take 10,000 of these refugees. So here's my question. Well, I have several questions, but how do you, like this report states, you're going to have a clash of cultures here. And you have people who are maybe, and you know what, I'll get a little PC here, and I'll give some people the benefit of the doubt and say, you know what, maybe there are some people here who all they are looking for is to get away from civil war and from strife in their home country, and all they want is to come and become citizens and work and raise their families and do things that other people around the world do every day, all the time. Yeah, maybe there are some of those, but here's my question. Every picture that you've seen on the internet, every picture that you have seen on television or in a newspaper or any place else, all of the pictures that we see of these refugees, the majority of these refugees are young, military-aged men. Why is that? I want to know why that is. Oh, sure, there's a few women and children sprinkled in there just to make it look good, but why are the majority of these refugees young men, young, military-aged men? That's what I want to know. The other thing is that when you have an influx of people like this, and we have our own problem right now in this country with Mexicans and with South Americans who come to this country and they don't have, again, maybe some of them do, but for the most part, it doesn't appear, I'll put it that way, it doesn't appear that they have any intention of assimilation into American culture and into American society. And that's the thing that the German people are afraid of, because they know that the majority of these people have no intention of immigrating to Germany, assimilating into German culture and German society, and becoming German citizens. They'll end up living in enclaves all by themselves, and it'll be very very hard for other people to go into those communities and for people in those communities to go out of the community, to go elsewhere in Germany. And when you start to have that, you start to have a breakdown of your culture. And here's the thing, is that a century ago, when immigrants came here to America, they came here with the intention of becoming American citizens. Yes, they were proud of who they were, and yes, they were proud of their countries of origin, and yes, they were proud of their cultures, and they brought those cultures with them. And as a nation, we have benefited greatly from all the wonderful things that those people brought from their home countries the things of their culture that they brought with them, and we mixed that all together, and we got an American culture. But like I said, we've got an influx of Mexican and South American immigrants who, when they come here, they want to come here just for a job. They want to come here to work and send money back home. And they don't have any interest in assimilating into American society and American culture. And that's a very big danger. And the German people are aware of this. And could it happen here? I don't know. Like I said, we've already got a problem with it, with Mexicans and South Americans and others streaming across our southern border who are having a problem, shall we say, assimilating. But I'm going to take a very quick break. We will come back and talk a little presidential politics and try to squeeze as much as I can into the time we have left. So don't go anywhere. You are listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble. Thank you for hanging out with me today. I will be right back. back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio on this September 11th, 2015. And, of course, we are remembering those that we lost today and remembering the attack on our country. And, you know, there's a lot of questions as, you know, have we learned anything? Have we done anything different? You know, it's a debate that goes on. But very quickly here before we have to get out of here, I've got Got some presidential polling numbers here, some new ones here. This is from CNN. We have Donald Trump, of course, has become the first Republican to top 30%. This is from a CNN ORC poll. He is tied with right now, well, not tied, but he's climbing up there. Ben Carson has 19%, and right now, former Florida Governor Jeb Bush, third place with 9%. He's down 4 points since August. Ted Cruz is in fourth place with 7. Former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, both at 5%. All the other candidates at 3% or less. That would include Florida Senator Marco Rubio. And, you know, so there's a lot of, there's some movement here. There's Ben Carson is catching up with Donald Trump, and right now today, you know, we're a year out, so a lot of things can change, but you know, they're really kind of running away with it right now. Carson's gains, he is up 13 points among Republicans and 11 points among conservatives. He's of course running closest to Trump among white evangelicals, 32% back Trump, 28% Carson. Of course, that's a pretty key voting block. Most Republican voters at 51% think Trump is most likely to emerge as the GOP winner today. Well, again, like I said, we're still a year out, so a lot can happen. And 19% who think that Jeb Bush will be on the party ticket, 11% who think it will be Ben Carson. And in a July poll, 14% of Republican voters thought that Scott Walker would be the winner. Supportive outsiders like Trump, of course, are continuing to grow. Carly Fiorina, who was not in the primetime debate last time, but who will be next week. And, of course, we will be covering it, and we'll talk about that next week. Her support is growing. And, you know, for a lot of these outside people, like Donald Trump, like Ben Carson, Carly Fiorina, the biggest part of their appeal is that they are outsiders, that they haven't been in Washington for 100 years. And it's really stunning that the Republican Party can't recognize that. And, you know, like I said, we're a year out. It's very early in this contest, and it's going to be a roller coaster ride. And the rest of this report, so another little piece in here, says that part of Donald Trump's growth, of course, is his talking about illegal immigration. And 51% of Republicans now call that issue extremely important, up from 39% in June. And among that group of people, that group of Republicans, Donald Trump has a pretty big lead, with 42% compared with 17% for Ben Carson, 10 for Ted Cruz, 9 for Jeb Bush, 5 for Scott Walker. On the Democrat side, you know, we know that Hillary is having some problems. Over the Labor Day weekend, Joe Biden was crabbing about the economy, and he made a speech in Pittsburgh, and one of the things he said was, "I'm mad, I'm angry." Well, let's see. You've been the vice president for 7 years. There are 90-plus million Americans out of work, and a good portion of those your administration doesn't even count anymore. We have 47 million people on food stamps. We have how many millions of people that have just stopped looking for work who are not even actively in the job force anymore, not looking for work. But you're going to crab about the economy? I mean, it was pretty stunning to me. But, you know, the numbers change. We don't know whether or not if Uncle Joe's going to get in yet, but and in Iowa, Hillary has lost her edge, and there with this report here. This is from Politico that I believe it is 41-40 now, Bernie Sanders to Hillary Clinton. But of course, those numbers change if Uncle Joe jumps in, which everybody thinks he will. We're just kind of waiting around for it. Let's see, Hillary Clinton. If Joe Biden gets in, Hillary Clinton comes in Iowa at 48%. I'm sorry, Clinton 38%, Sanders 27%, and Joe Biden at 20%. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see whether or not that he jumps back in that race, and or if he jumps into the race. And let's see here. Difficulty here. It's the end of the show. I don't need any technical difficulties. But, of course, I really wanted to get to Kim Davis, and I had a sound clip from her with presidential candidate and former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee as she was released from jail this week. And she will go back to work on Monday, and it will remain to be seen whether or not that she continues to refuse to issue marriage licenses, or she will have her name removed from those licenses, and will let her deputy clerks take over. And we will see what happens with that. And I have a piece about that over at my blog, The Conservative Cauldron, and you can find that at theconservativecauldron.blogspot.com. I have a lot more to say about that, about why I support Kim Davis 100%. And but very quickly, before I have to get out of here. Dateline, West Hartford, Vermont. A West Hartford man heading to court Wednesday afternoon in Vermont was clocked by state troopers heading 112 miles per hour, Vermont State Police said. Seth Kitchener, 33, was charged with excessive speed and negligent operation after he was stopped on I-89 northbound in Royalton, Vermont, State Police said. Before he was stopped, troopers said they saw him traveling over 100 miles per hour and weaving in and out of traffic in a 65-mile. State police said he was heading to court to, wait for it, take care of a speeding ticket. Well, you know, you don't want to be late for court. You know, I certainly would not be. And you know, when you got to be there, you got to be there. And so, but. Seth probably has a few more problems on his hands now that he was clocked going 112 miles per hour in a 65 mile per hour zone. We can all do the math on that. And, well, he's going to owe a little bit of money. But that is about it for me today. I want to thank everybody for hanging out with me today on this September 11th. And you can find me at theconservativecauldron.blogspot.com. Like I said, I've got a new piece up there about Kim Davis and why I support her 100%. So please go there and check it out. You can find me on Facebook, facebook.com/BeckyNoble. I am on Twitter, @PatriotWitch. And please go to theblacksphere.net. There are lots of awesomely talented people there writing lots of wonderful, fabulous things, including myself. I have a new piece up there this week, and please go there and check it out. So, everybody, have a fantastic, wonderful weekend, and I will see you next time.